दस्तो इह्यभद्राणि विदुनोति सुसुत्सतां नस्तप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भगवति नैस्तिकी। Hare Krishna. So today we'll be discussing Canto 4, Chapter 26, verse number 25. तिलकं मलिनं विहर्षं वक्त्रं नते वितिलकं मलिनं विहर्षं संरम्भविमं अवदृष्टमपेतरागम् संरम्भ विमं अविमृष्टमपेतरागम् पश्ये स्तना अपि शुचोपहतौ सुजातौ पश्ये स्तना अपि शुचोपहतौ सुजातौ बादरं विगट कुंकुम पंकरागम् बिंबादरं विगट कुंकुम पंकरागम् वक्त्रं नते वितिलकं मलिनं विहर्षं संरम्भ विमं अविमृष्टमपेतरागम् पश्ये स्तनामपि शुचोपहतौ सुजातौ बिम्बादरं विगट कुंकुम पंकरागम् Vaktram, face, na, never, te, your, vitilakam, without being decorated, malinam, unclean, viharsam, morose, samramba, with anger, imam, dangerous, avimrustam, without luster, without affection, pasye, I have seen. Sthanav, your breast, api, also, sucha upahatau, wet because of your tears, sujatau, so nice, Bimbadaram, red lips, vigata, without, kumkuma panka, saffron, ragam, color. Translation by Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. My dear boy, until this day, I have never seen your face without tilaka decorations. Nor have I seen you so morose and without luster or affection. Nor have I seen your two nice breasts wet with tears from your eyes. Nor have I ever before seen your lips, which are ordinarily as red as the bimba fruit, without their reddish hue. Shall we all read translation together? My dear boy, until this day, I have never seen your face without tilaka decorations, nor have I seen you so morose and without luster of affection, nor have I seen your two nice breasts wet with tears from your eyes, nor have I ever been before seen your lips, which are ordinarily as red as the bimba fruit, without their reddish hue. Every woman looks very beautiful. Purport by Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Every woman looks very beautiful when decorated with tilaka and vermilion. A woman generally becomes very attractive when her lips are colored with reddish saffron or vermilion. But when one's consciousness and intelligence are without any brilliant thoughts about Krishna, they become morose and lusterless, so much so that one cannot derive any benefit despite sharp intelligence. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjanasalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Tada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishavamscha Sri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha Mukam karoti vachalam pangam langayate girim yat prapatamaham vande paramananda madhavam angam langayate sailam mukam avartaye sudhim yat prapatamaham vande krishna chaitanya ishwaram sri chaitanya padam bhoja madhupebhyo namo namaha katanchit asayad esham swapitad dhandabhag bhave हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते प्राप्त कांचन गौरंगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी नमोस्तुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिय वाचकल्पादरोभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः नमः ओम विश्वपादाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी नामने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणी निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात देश तारिणी श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. सो लेट मी रिपीटेडली ऑफर माय रेस्पेक्ट्स ऑन टू द बी लाइक डिवोटीज हु ऑलवेज टेस्ट द हनी ऑफ द लोटस फीट ऑफ लॉर्ड चैतन्य महाप्रभु. इवन a dogish non-devotee somehow takes shelter of the devotees, he enjoys the aroma of the lotus flower. Translation: my dear wife, until this day I have never seen your face without tilaka decorations, nor have I seen you so morose and without lust or affection. Nor have I seen your nice two breasts wet with tears from your eyes, nor have I ever before seen your lips, which are ordinarily as red as the bimba fruit, without their reddish hue. So this whole chapter, if you look at the essence of it, it shows that the jiva gives up his intelligence under the tamoguna, but then at the end regains back his dharmic intelligence. So here we find that the King Puranjana, when he returns back from hunting and visits his wife's palace, he sees that his wife was without any tilaka decoration, nor covering of her lips. So this itself was an indication to him there is something wrong with his wife. So therefore she is displaying her displeasure towards the activities he had performed when he went to the forest, that he recklessly killed animals just to satisfy his senses. And Srila Prabhupada here is trying to bring out in two different levels. One on the material level, that the person, the wife should be attractive for the husband, so that she can satisfy his senses. In Ramayana, if you read carefully, after the fall of Ravana, Mandodari's wife, she weeps. She weeps that saying that I could not satisfy my husband Ravana, and therefore he was chasing after other women. So it's not my husband's fault, rather it is my fault that I could not track him, and therefore his uncontrolled senses went in different directions. So equally, in a grihastha, it is the partner, the wife, has to decorate herself vedically so that she can attract her husband and yes, in vedically satisfy him. It's not that she should decorate in a provocative way, but in a way, in a Vedic way, so that she can attract her husband. And we find here the cultural difference between typically the north of India and the south of India. In the north of India, we find Matajis, they decorate their lips with red color, whereas if you come to typical South India, we don't find anyone applying any lipsticks. It's just simple lips. And I found that's a contrast when Sweta got married into a North Indian family, wherein her in-laws would often say that, why don't you apply lipstick? She says, I'm not trained to do that. Says, no, because now you have entered into the North Indian family, you should apply lipstick. So many times she's not applying lipstick, but then when she makes a video call, immediately she goes inside and takes the lipstick and applies to her lips. So that she said, okay, now that my mother-in-law is happy seeing her daughter-in-law with the lipstick. So it's sort of a cultural difference I find between the two places. Now, the second part, Prabhupada is trying to talk about consciousness and the intelligence. Therefore, we find the intelligence has been described or defined in Bhagavatam 3rd canto, 26th chapter, verse number 30. I'll just read the translation, that it's doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory and sleep, as determined by their functions, are said to be the distinct characteristics of intelligence. I repeat, doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory and sleep, as determined by their different functions, are said to be the distinct characteristics of intelligence. So therefore, anything being said, the intelligence should doubt whether what is being said is right or wrong. And starts with misapprehension, which implies that the intelligence is trying to identify oneself with the body. And then the correct apprehension is that the intelligence is able to discriminate, well, he is not the body, but he is something different, which is that he is the spirit soul. So unless the person comes to this discrimination, all his activities are said to be shrama eva hi keval. And so therefore, so much so that one cannot derive any benefit despite sharp intelligence. So when, so long the person is under misapprehension or bodily identification, whatever activity the person may perform, they are useless activities. Till the person comes to the platform of correct apprehension, implying that he knows that he is not the body, he is the spirit soul, and therefore his activities should be performed on that platform. And that is the real benefit. So therefore here we can see that the consciousness moves from the material consciousness, transitions to the higher consciousness, which is the spiritual consciousness. So the intelligence, I find that has been equally divided, which I find useful from the material perspective, that has been described by Howard Gardner. He is a psychologist, and he defined 9 types of intelligence. Has anyone heard this part? That the Gardner describes 9 types of intelligence. And I felt this is relevant to us in the sense, I'll go through them so that you can understand relevance. That one type of intelligence is called naturalist. And his understanding is that he can understand the difference between the living things and the nature, surroundings and environment. So if someone says that you should protect environment, so this person understands it very easily. It's not that one needs to explain to him that yes, I should be responsible to protect the environment. So that is his intelligence. Then there is other person is called musical intelligence. So this person can discern the sounds, their pitch, tone, rhythm and timbre. So this is another type of intelligence. And therefore, those who go on Harina must be having this musical intelligence, so therefore they love to participate in Harina. Yes, Prabhu. Because Prabhu Devangi Prabhu, he often participates in Harina, and I find that he has that deeper intonation because nature has given him that musical intelligence, and that's very prominent in the, in those who go in on Harina. Then there is the logical or mathematical intelligence. Normally this is our understanding. Someone we call him as intelligent if he can do mathematical calculation and so on. But this is only one of the 9 intelligences. It's not that that's the only intelligence. So this person can quantify things, making hypotheses, and is trying to prove them. So do not be worried or do not think that, oh, my child is not intelligent because he is not logical, he is not mathematical. That's not the only way the intelligence is being defined currently. Then, existential. So this is a type of intelligence which is very favorable for Krishna consciousness. That this person tackles the questions of why we live and why we die. So these are the deeper questions which this intelligence entertains. It implies that when you are giving a book or you are talking to people, and if that person happens to have this existential intelligence, he is easy to grasp things. He can easily understand, he can easily relate to what is being told because that is his background. Then we have the interpersonal, sensing people's feelings and motives. So someone who is working maybe in HR or receptionist roles, so interactive roles, or teachers, lecturers, all those people should have this interpersonal skills so that they can communicate what is required to be communicated at the level at which the other person can really understand. Then the bodily kinesthetic, so coordinating your mind with your body, which means that they are all athletes and people who participate in games. So their movement are under their control, or they can easily flex it. Then linguistic, finding the right words to express what you mean. So this is once again a type of intelligence. There are people, there are persons who can speak so nicely, who can communicate exact words, and therefore we can understand, well, this is their intelligence. It's not, that person may not be mathematically oriented, or that may not be able to person calculate, but still does not mean that he is non-intelligent, because his intelligence is elsewhere. Similarly, intrapersonal, understanding yourself, what you feel and what you want. So this is once again very favorable for spiritual understanding, because he is introspective. He tries to understand himself. Then spatial, that's the last one, visualizing the world in a 3D form. So we can see that there are 9 types of intelligences, and if I know the audience to which category they belong to, or a combination of this, accordingly I can give them, or we can give them the required treatment at their level. So it's very important that we understand someone's background in terms of their intelligence, and accordingly an instruction can be given. And we can engage persons of different intelligences in Krishna consciousness, because Krishna consciousness encompasses all these 9 types of intelligences. So if someone is a music lover, you can immediately call him, hey, here in Krishna consciousness you can sing, you can dance. So therefore, why not join this movement, or why not you take it up this particular aspect, because that fits into their background. We find that His Holiness Sachinandan Maharaj, he used to say that he is from Germany, so those of you know him. And he is a musician, or he was a musician before joining Krishna consciousness. And he thought he would be able to entertain with his guitar after he joined temple. But then he found that no one was responding when he was playing guitar in the temple. Then he understood, well, here the devotees are not musically talented or musically intelligent. So therefore he said, after that he never played guitar in the temple or at the devotees, because they don't understand that aspect. So all this material intelligence is not helpful in, if it is being done only on a material platform, unless we raise it to Krishna consciousness. So the consciousness, it has seen, it is on one level the material platform, then you have on the spiritual platform. And one should transition from the material platform to the spiritual platform. Only then the person overcomes the moroseness which is being mentioned here, and he regains back his luster. Otherwise, the person is always morose and luster on the material platform, because the way the nature has created for us, there's always anxiety. We always live in anxiety for the simple reason because we create anxiety for others, and hence we become anxious. Any festival celebration in the modern world is a source of anxiety for Mother Nature. Today being Christmas, worldwide Christmas is being celebrated, but the consequence of that is just one country like US kills, I believe, more than 20 or 25 million turkey birds. So any festival celebration, it involves intoxication, meat eating and gambling and illicit sex. And this is what is meant by celebration worldwide. Majority of the communities, this is how they celebrate their festivals. So that's the anxiety. So intelligence, whereas Krishna, defines intelligence in terms of the Buddhi Yoga in 2.39. That this Buddhi Yoga is clearly explained in chapter 10, verse 10, as being direct communion with the Lord, who is sitting as Paramatma in everyone's heart. But such communion does not take place without devotional service. So therefore, only a Krishna conscious person has real intelligence. And hence we can say that intelligence occurs at two different levels or two states. Intelligence not trained in Krishna consciousness and intelligence trained in Krishna consciousness. And how do they differ? So intelligence not trained in Krishna consciousness is given, there are many verses, but then I thought that the verse Bhagavad Gita 2.62, 2.63 and 2.67 tries to describe the intelligence of those who are not trained in Krishna consciousness. So the 2.62, I think everyone knows it. Dhyayato Vishayan Pumsa Sangha Seshu Pajayate Sangha Sanjayate Kama Kama Krodo Vijayate. So while contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment lust develops, and from lust anger arises. 2.63 Krodha Bhavate Sammoha Sammoha Smriti Vibhramaha Smriti Bhramsha Buddhi Nasho Buddhi Nasa Pranashyati. From anger complete delusion arises, and from delusion bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. So the eight stages in which the person falls down from mode of goodness to the mode of ignorance is described in 2.62 to 2.63. And the third verse, 2.67, Indriyanam hi charatam yanmano nurvidyate Tat asya harati prajna vayur nava ivambasi. As a strong wind sweeps away a boat on the water, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. So we find a person not trained in Krishna consciousness is subjected to these feelings, that he is contemplating on any object. And then from that contemplation, thinking, feeling, willing, and puts into action, and finally falls into the material pool. And these activities are repeated again and again and again. And there is no way by which that person can come out of that, because he is thinking only eating, sleeping, mating, and depending are the sources of pleasure, because he identifies himself with the body and he does not see anything beyond that. And why does he identify himself with only the body? Because he is committing sinful activities on a day-to-day basis. What he is eating is abominable. What he is drinking is abominable. What he is performing other activities, the abominable activities. And Krishna says in 7.28, persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are free from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. So unless a person is free from sin, he cannot transition from the material platform to the spiritual platform. So one must transition from material platform to spiritual platform, and in order to become free from sin, one should not involve oneself in activities like eating meat, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. And this is my personal experience in another Bhakti Ruksha. When I ran the Bhakti Ruksha for 4 years, most of our participants were from Kerala. And in India, one of the states where they eat a lot of meat in all the three sessions is Kerala. And in Kerala, once again, there are some places where they are heavy meat eaters. No matter what you tell them, if the meat is not served on the plate, they do not come for the food. So we ran over 4 years Bhakti Vruksha, and every class we repeat the same aspect that, okay, at least you do the chanting. Forget about eating, you do chanting. They can't take, only in the class they will do the chanting, but back home never did they do the chanting. Why? Because meat eating functions like a firewall. It won't allow the transcendence to penetrate through. So long they're in the class, they're happy. But the moment the class is over, they're back home. Then our class used to be on a Friday night. So from Saturday morning till the next Friday, they were in their regular activities of eating meat, intoxication. And we tried and tried. We prayed to our government IDTs, but there was no perceptible change. It's not that the change would occur in 4 years' time. It would take for certain persons maybe in lifetimes. But what I'm trying to say is that transitioning from the material platform to the spiritual platform can occur only when, as Krishna says, when a person is freed from the dualities, or when a person is free from sin. So on one side I'm committing regularly sin, and on the other side I'm trying to chant on my beads. These two are incompatible. They cannot go together. Although we say that, okay, you do chanting, with the chanting you become free from meat eating, illicit sex or intoxication. But that is a very, very long, drawn process. One cannot continue for a long time. Because on one side you want to chant, other side you want to eat meat. And the same group we had in Mataji, I was asking her, look, I have never taken meat on my plate. Fortunately, I was born in a family where that was not an issue for me. So therefore I have never taken. And I said, is meat really that tasty? She said, Prabhu, you don't know. You have no idea. So she used to say that they would go to Tirupati. I mean, those of you have gone to Tirupati, you have an idea. We go to Balaji temple, climbing up the steps, have darshan of Lord Balaji, and eagerly run back to Tirupati, where we can visit a portal and then satisfy our taste buds. So Krishna consciousness is in silo, that is not applied into day-to-day life. Why is it? Because the senses have not tasted a higher taste, and hence they feel that this is the ultimate goal, and hence we spend all our time in only trying to satisfy the senses. And when we spend our time in trying to satisfy the senses, then we find that it is, though it's a sharp intelligence, it is of so much that one cannot derive any benefit in spite of sharp intelligence. Yet the person may be very intelligent, but then the person is not deriving any benefit, because the ultimate goal of life is not known. People do not understand that there's a goal for in life. In the college or the university where we are teaching, we ask the students, what is your goal in life? They simply say that earning money is the goal of life. Nothing else. Almost every semester after semester, this is a typical question I ask the students. What is your goal in life? They said, Chandra, getting a job, earning money is the goal in life and nothing else. And it is not the fault of that individual because that's how the societies are running. That is how the countries are running. The best country on this planet, we say that USA, with the highly economically developed, but look at the person who is heading that country. Character, if there is no character, there is no process of knowledge. That's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 13.8 to 13.12, that the process of knowledge is the development of character. If there is no character, there is no real knowledge. If there is no character building, there is no real knowledge. That's what we find. All the 13.8 to 12, they're all describing the character of a Krishna conscious person. If you can develop that character, then you automatically become Krishna conscious. We have an interesting pastime from Ramayana on this aspect. After Ravana fell on the battlefield, Mandodari wanted to see that person. Who is that person who has the ability to kill my husband? My husband is not an ordinary personality. He is such a warrior, no one could defeat him, and here is an ordinary human mortal who could kill my husband. So, typically when a woman loses husband in the Vedic culture, they open up their hair and the tilak, everything is rubbed, and in that hasty emotional mood, she starts running towards the battlefield where Rama was. And Rama was sitting on a rock there. It was a sunny time and one could see the shadow. As Mandodari was running towards Rama, the shadow was approaching Lord Rama. The moment Rama saw the shadow, he could make out from the shadow that it is a woman's shadow. And what did he do? He took a step backward, indicating that here is a lady's shadow, and under Vedic culture, I cannot even touch a lady's shadow. That is the character of Lord Rama, and he takes a step backward. Immediately Mandodari stops and she understands that this is what is meant by success to Lord Rama. Her husband was such a lusty person. He was chasing every woman on the planet, whereas here is a person who did not even allow a shadow to touch him. So unless we raise our consciousness to that platform, it is difficult for us to understand Krishna consciousness, because the senses are so strong, it keeps us pulling down again and again. And once the senses reach or experience that higher platform, then this lower platform easy to leave. And this is what we understand from the verses in Bhagavatam 1.6.17. I'll not read the Sanskrit part. O Vyasadeva, at that time, being exceedingly overpowered by feelings of happiness, every part of my body became separately enlivened. Being absorbed in an ocean of ecstasy, I could not see both myself and the Lord. So here is Narada Mahamuni trying to explain to Vyasadeva about how his senses became electrified, in touch with Krishna consciousness, in touch with the Lord. So that's the higher place. And equally, Dhruva Maharaj says in 4.9.3, that when Dhruva Maharaj saw his Lord just in front of him, he was greatly agitated and offered him obeisances and respect. He fell flat before him like a rod and became absorbed in love of Godhead. Dhruva Maharaj in ecstasy looked upon the Lord as if he were drinking the Lord with his eyes. kissing the lotus feet of the Lord with his mouth and embracing the Lord with his arms. All the features of Guru Maharaj's bodily expression indicate that upon seeing the Lord face to face, he developed the 8 kinds of transcendental ecstasy in the body. So unless one experiences the transcendental ecstasy, we continue to feel that the material ecstasy which the senses get in engagement with the sensual objects is the goal in life. So one should be exposed to this transcendental ecstasy. And equally find Vritarashtra in 6.11.26 is offering, O lotus-eyed Lord, as baby birds that have not yet developed their wings, always look for their mother to return and feed them. As small calves tied with ropes await anxiously the time of milking, when they will be allowed to drink the milk of their mothers, or as a morose wife whose husband is away from home, always longs for him to return and satisfy her in all respects, I always yearn for the opportunity to render direct service unto you. So therefore here we find Narada Mahamuni or Dhruva Maharaj or Vritarashtra, that they are narrating their experiences when their senses came in contact with the Supreme Lord. And here on the other side we find the persons on the material platform, they engage their senses and they are also experiencing ecstasy. But that ecstasy is entirely different from the ecstasy one derives or one experiences when in contact with the Supreme Lord. And in the material world, we are constantly bombarded with material energy only. And therefore, we feel that this is the goal. And unless we are exposed to Krishna consciousness, we are not exposed to spiritual energy. And the only way to transcend from the material to the spiritual is that we should be exposed to spiritual energy. So while being exposed to spiritual energy, simultaneously there should be a withdrawal from the material energy. To the extent we are exposed to spiritual energy, to that extent we become withdrawal from the material energy. Otherwise, in our present condition, the material energy and the sensual pleasures we derive from the material energy are tangible. They are perceptible for any person. So how do we come in contact with the spiritual energy? Only when we are chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we should expose ourselves to spiritual energy. So just as we are bombarded with material energy, we should in a way should say, because bombardment is typically considered a negative sense, but otherwise we should be bombarded with Krishna consciousness, spiritual energy, chanting. Then Krishna Katha, we should regularly, constantly hear Krishna Katha, because that is spiritual. And we should honor prasadam, not eat prasadam. Eating prasadam brings down, although it is a spiritual activity, but we do not derive the benefit of this full spiritual aspect if it is not honored, but if it is eaten. Because even when we are taking prasadam, we forget the basic Ayurvedic principle that I should eat only 50% of my stomach. However sumptuous the prasadam could be, I should eat only 50% of my stomach. And other 25% water and other 25% air. This is the typical Ayurvedic principle. Because these days we find many messages are being sent regarding prasadam. So therefore, chanting Krishna Katha, eating prasadam, and association with devotees. We should be constantly exposed to these aspects. Then Krishna consciousness or the spiritual aspects becomes tangible compared to the material energy which is currently tangible. So till we come to that platform, we will be, as here Prabhupada says in his translation, we become morose, we become depressed, we become lusterless, we lose our shine. So summarizing, we should understand the goal of human life. If I do not understand the goal of human life, all my activities will be conducted on a material platform. The moment I understand the goal of life, it is not material, there is something beyond that. There is something called for transcendence, and there is a goal for transcendence. Only then I will try to expose myself or I take transcendence seriously, and then it becomes tangible. Yeah? Any questions or any comment before we take up? You want to say something about Christmas? We can say about Christmas because it's quantity. I'm not sure about the time. Yes, Prabhu?
Why did Lord Chaitanya fill everybody up to the neck?
Sorry, why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
Lord Chaitanya would fill everybody with prasadam up to the neck.
Possibly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has seen that the persons are at that level. So therefore, let me fill them up with the up to the neck. Yes, in the beginning one should satisfy one's senses with prasadam. But then one should raise to there from that platform. It's not that yes, one should not take prasadam. It is spiritual. But when you are taking prasadam in the mode of eating rather than honoring, then we are bringing that down to the material platform only. We do not get the full benefit. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu equally said that you should chant and you should dance 24 hours. You take my word and then preach. So what is convenient to us, we are taking that one particular aspect and then leaving other aspects. So Srila Prabhupada says that, okay, Bhim has eaten. But why do you compare Bhim only for eating? He has done other Herculean tasks. Why don't you do that as well? Yes,
Prabhupada.
Yeah, the answer question is yes, you take prasadam, but that's only a beginning, but that should not be the end in itself.
Yeah. It's appropriate on festival days to have a big feast, because it's a celebration. But he wouldn't fill everybody up to the neck every day. You find that description when there's a celebration, there's a festival, and Lord Chaitanya will fill everybody up.
But there are, yes, Prabhu, one should eat. I'm not saying one should not eat, but personally I feel that prasadam is to be only honored rather than eating with material consciousness. When I'm off.
That I understood, that's what you said first, but I asked the question.
Yeah, anyone else has a comment on that question? Because Prabhu is insisting on that question.
I was waiting for the answer to the question.
Yes.
I want to say something. Okay. When Srila Prabhupada brought the important people to India, and he was visiting few guests, people. So, one devotee ate about 32 chapatis, and then he complained, pain in the stomach. So Srila Prabhupada said, I was counting. You are eating so many, you will be sick, and you didn't realize. So in India, the tendency is to give as much as possible. Please eat, please eat, please eat. And therefore, he was just sort of eating, and then he didn't realize. So Srila Prabhupada said that you have to be very careful, especially in India, because people want to give you a lot of prasadam. But you have to eat only, say that this is enough, no more. Thank you very much.
Well, personally I feel from medical perspective, because Prabhu is a doctor, he is saying the more we eat, the blood rushes to the stomach only. And the blood, when it rushes to the stomach, it becomes empty in the brain. And when it becomes empty in the brain, you become drowsy. Your other spiritual activities, your other spiritual activities will suffer. Yes, in the beginning that is fine. Maybe 1 day, 2 days, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. But after that, there should be a change. Or one can say, well, age advances, even if you want to eat, you can't eat. Yes, Prabhu.
On that point, I say, in 1958, I was doing my first English examination, anatomy, physiology, and biochemistry. So, as soon as I went to the examiner asked me, did you have your lunch? I said, yes. So he said, all right, tell me what happens after lunch, what happened, physiology. So I have to tell the same thing, what you are saying. That so much blood is gushing to the stomach, that other parts of the body, they are not getting that much blood. And you feel sleepy. And he said, if you eat too much, you feel sleepy.
That's what you do after a feast. That's what you do. You have sleep.
What is your answer, Prabhu? What's your call on that?
Which one?
That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fed everyone up to the neck.
I believe that it was for festivals. He wasn't doing it every day, filling everybody up to the neck. So you know. There are occasions where there's a feast, and part of that celebration, part of Krishna consciousness, is honouring. You know, instead of being a yogi, oh, hang on, I can only feel my stomach up after I have done enough of water. It's part of Bhunte Bhojayade Jayava. It's part of our culture to celebrate by honouring and distributing prasadam. So, you know, ordinarily we would be yukdahara viharasya, right? Regulated. But on some occasions it's appropriate to eat because it's a feast and it's a celebration of the Lord's appearance day or whatever. Just like today we're going to have a picnic to celebrate Christmas.
I come from a different angle, though, because I practiced medicine for more than 10 years in India. And we used to receive hundreds of patients. And I have observed that those who take their intake in terms of only 50% of their stomach quota, 25% of water, and leaving 25% for air, no matter on which day it is, they take only that quantity, and when it comes to festival also, when the items are all there, this is how I've become habituated, I've become cultivated. So therefore, you may be serving me sumptuous, delicious items, but still I can't take it, because this is how I've trained myself. So this is something like satisfaction, and if that satisfaction is not there, no matter what it is, I may like to take Srikhand, because recently we made a lot of Srikhand, on the day I'm served, but I would also like to have Srikhand the next session and the following session, because it's so sumptuous, it's so nice, stomach feeling. So, it's a habit, it's a cultivation. If my habit is not in terms of satisfying my senses, in a way in which I feel it's comfortable, then it gets stretched on because I've not regulated myself. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a wonderful class. To give an example reminds me, my father was the type of man who would feed everybody up to their neck, and especially at Christmas time, because that was a culture of his, and if he didn't have to give, he would feel ashamed. However, he was never overweight in his life. I think it's the person who takes so much has to come to the conclusion of whether they've had too much or they've had enough. It's like intoxication of any type, say with alcohol. A man takes a drink and then the drink takes the man.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu.
With devotees, there's a thing called false renunciation. Right? So, we encourage the devotees to take their full satisfaction, right? And not be, you know, and yet they internally they want it, but externally they're saying no because, well, for whatever reason, they want to appear as being renounced. So, Srila Prabhupada encouraged, and I think Lord Chaitanya encouraged, and I know we should encourage the devotees, take to your full satisfaction. Right? If you want more Srikant, take it. Don't reject it. Because it is not a material activity, as you say, it's a spiritual activity. And it nourishes our spiritual identity. You know, it nourishes us spiritually. So, there's kind of like there's niyamagraha. There's not following the rules and regulations or being too attached. So, why Lord Chaitanya encouraged the devotees and filled them up to the neck, which is, you know, from an Ayurvedic point of view, maybe not a good idea, but from a spiritual point of view, it's to make all of the devotees fully satisfied and fully content in their Krishna consciousness. You know, and I know I've seen devotees more often than not who reach, you know, push the prasadam away, but then later on you find them out the back, you know. So certainly good to be regulated. There's no doubt about that. And taking prasadam teaches us to be regulated. But there are occasions where, if it's a festival or a celebration, then Lord Chaitanya would dispense with the, you know, the rules and regulations and just take prasadam, enjoy, have fun.
But I'm only trying to say that let's not convert a spiritual activity to a material activity. If it is spiritual, let it, as a principle, exceptions you say, okay, festival days, somehow you have restricted all through the time, and on a festival time you want a little more liberal to yourself, well, you can be. I've seen, especially on Balram Purnima, people taking 8 to 9 glasses of Varuni. And then it comes back to the point that the devotees who are standing behind, they don't get even a drop of Varuni. So therefore, you should encourage cooks to make much more quantity what is being cooked, so that that satisfies them.
Can I add something? I think I'm hearing both, and I think there is an objective to both. I think basically when a devotee has to restrain their senses on so many fronts, I think it is encouraged for them to have a lot of prasadam during festivals so that their senses are engaged, so that they don't, and they are satisfied, so that they don't have to seek sensual gratitude, they're not dragged by mind. Yes. I think that is one purpose.
Then I go to sleep afterwards. So.
Yeah, but at least. But the thing is, at least, you know, if someone like Prabhu was mentioning, you're restraining. There may be a point when they're being tempted by other things. So to avoid that temptation, suppose if they are at least in one, they're restraining in so many angles, so at least in one area, at occasions, if you are allowed to just enjoy, so then that senses are satisfied, so you don't look for anything elsewhere. I think that is the purpose of it. Having said that, as the person is getting more and more the higher taste, even on festivals they try to restrict themselves and just to regulate that, even on festivals. It depends on the level of the person. So both are compatible depending on the level. And the second thing is honoring prasadam, I think, and eating, it is, there's a slight difference. Like Prabhupada, whenever he was eating, he would not talk. He would like to just look at the prasadam and just eat. And second part of honoring prasadam is that, okay, I've got something in my plate, there is something that I don't like, but that is still prasadam, I have to finish it, I won't throw it off. So that is part of honoring. It's not that I eat just what I like. If it's on my plate, okay, it's on my plate. Whether I like it or not, it is prasadam, I finish it. I think that is also an element of honoring. So there's a little difference in between honoring and eating. And I think maybe that sort of fulfills the two things that I'm hearing.
Okay. Gandharad Bhagavati. Yes, Prabhu.
On the same point, but particularly in Denver and in ISKCON all over the world, we have festival every day. I noticed that in the last week we had Srikant 5 days in a row.
Yeah.
So we have festival every day.
Let's not talk about it, let's just go and do it, right?
Yes, on that one, Prabhu, there are temples like Srinagam temple, they have 300 festivals out of 360 days. 300 festivals. People coming from south of India, they know this, that especially if you are from Tamil Nadu or Srinagam, they know that every day is a festival to attract the devotees. So therefore, people who stay in Srinagam, they never leave Srinagam because every day is a festival for them.
They get a lot of prasadam.
Actually, the days when we were there in Sri Lanka, we have enjoyed prasadam. Yes, Prabhu.
Guru Krishna recommends that the practice of yoga will become one is moderate in these habits. And everyone finds their own level of what they require to be able to practice their yoga successfully. Just a couple of comments that Prabhupada made. Sometimes he criticized some people becoming overweight. He recommended they become fit but not fat. And I recall last time with Prabhupada would often be restricted in his diet by some of his carers. So one time he threw all that caution away, and there was another devotee who was also able to try. The Prabhupada's comment was, we want to die eating prasadam.
To hell with the cooks or something.
To hell with the Prabhupada, he saw that Prabhupada's taking prasadam very deeply, he's never made it his experience. Sometimes Prabhupada would just face the wall, he'd sit right next to the wall. So no one could disturb him. He wasn't distracted by anything else, and he was just that prasadam has been non-different from Krishna. And I believe that the highest degree.
Thank you, Prabhu.
You want to do something about Krishna? No. Let's go. You leave. Put Christmas in the practice by having something to eat.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't